Good morning.
Good morning.
Please proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Jan Trayson. I'm appearing for Anjali Hammond. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
Okay.
In a case involving a Native American child, or as the statute says, an Indian child, the Indian Child Welfare Act imposes, quote, more exacting requirements than a typical termination or dependency case. And I'm quoting language from the Supreme Court's recent decision in TAW, which affirmed really what was already well-settled law in Washington. And the reason we're here today is because in Anjali Hammond's case, the trial court failed to apply the correct legal standard when it considered this guardianship petition. And for this reason, the court's order should be vacated and this matter should be remanded for a new trial. The main issue before the trial court in this case was whether the services provided to my client were sufficient to remedy the alleged parental deficiencies that the department alleged in her case. Ms. Hammond argued at trial that under both the ICWA and Washington law, the department was under a heightened duty to engage her in parental services, in remedial services that were designed to prevent the breakup of the Indian family, and that these were heightened and reasonable efforts were not enough, like in a dependency, that active efforts must be shown. The problem at the trial here is that when Ms. Hammond's counsel argued that the department's efforts had been insufficient under the very exacting ICWA standards, the trial court did not apply the rigorous ICWA standards and defined the active efforts standard incorrectly. In fact, the trial court stated, and I'm quoting, active efforts means, I think it means they have to do something. And when pressed, the trial court stated, quote, I'm not sure I would go so far as to say that active efforts are necessarily different in quantity and quality from reasonable efforts. This is important because it's actually an incorrect statement of the law under the Supreme Court holding in TAW. Lastly, when pressed again, the trial court said, quote, I'm not going to make a ruling as a matter of law that I think active efforts and reasonable efforts are different. I think that's not for this court to decide. This is very problematic because the status of the law at the time of the trial was already that active efforts were different from reasonable efforts, and this was argued in the trial court. The Supreme Court decision affirming TAW, which was a Division II case, came down a few months later in October and stated ICWA and Washington ICWA impose more exacting requirements than a typical termination or dependency proceeding. The remedy in this case is to vacate the guardianship and to remand for a new trial under the proper heightened standard. It's particularly important in this case because the trial court had already expressed significant concerns, and that's the trial court's language, significant concerns with the services that had been provided to my client. The court had stated its concerns that the department had failed Ms. Hammond in providing insignificant time in showing her parental skills, in showing parenting time, in giving her parenting time with her son. This is reflected in pages 411 and 12 in the record. The court had viewed the visitation notes, which I urged your honors to take a look at. This is I've cited it in the last footnote in the briefing. The visitation notes are incredibly moving. The court mentioned that the visitation notes showed a very strong bond between my client and her son, and the visitation notes showed, quote, unfailingly positive visits between my client and her son in the last year and a half of the dependency. The trial court took a great deal of time reviewing the visitation notes and found them very moving himself. The trial court said that perhaps the services provided to Ms. Hammond had been, and again I'm quoting, appropriate but not adequate. The trial court was troubled, saying that perhaps the department's services to Ms. Hammond were you know, we're lacking because of the department's lack of funding, providing visitation supervisors, and the court was troubled by this. And this is very problematic because under the ICWA requires more because of the heightened standard that this state requires for Indian children. As this court knows, Congress enacted the Indian Child Welfare
Act. What was required that wasn't done?
She had asked for expanded visitation. She had moved for
Visitation isn't a service. Does ICWA change that?
It requires active efforts. It requires more. She had asked for expanded visitation, and perhaps it does require more after TAW. This is a new holding as of October, and it binds this court. And because the trial court applied the wrong legal standard, this case needs to go back for the correct law to be applied. Perhaps it does require more. She had asked for services for her partner to be included in the family services, which had been denied.
He wasn't a party. Is that you saying that's something of the more that's required is services to non-parties?
I'm
the partner
saying
wasn't the father.
He was not the father of this child. No.
So he was a stranger to the action.
He was not the father of the child of the son at issue
right.
here.
He was the no. subject of the no contact orders.
Yes.
Prohibiting him from having contact with the mother.
Yes. But the point here, Your Honor, is that because the judge applied the wrong standard, she wasn't getting the services that she was entitled to.
Well, I'm curious about that claim, though, that if someone is prohibited by law from having contact with the mother, that there's something in the Indian Child Welfare Act that imposes on the state an obligation to provide services to that person, notwithstanding the fact that they have no lawful ability to come in contact with the mother. It's not intuitive, so
no,
why would it be so?
Yeah, I'd welcome a chance to address that in my rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
My name is Melissa Nelson. I am an Assistant Attorney General representing the Department of Social and Health Services.
So, counsel hangs her hat pretty much on the TAW case. Why don't you take some time, discuss that case, and apply it to what we have here, giving us your view on why counsel is not correct in saying that that's the magic bullet that requires a new proceeding.
Okay. Well, TAW, counsel is correct that TAW doesn't change the standard. It outlines what has been the law in the state since 2011 when the Washington State Indian Child Welfare Act was adopted, and back, gosh, till I think 1979 when the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act was adopted, or even before that. What we have in this case is an interplay of the RCW 1336 guardianship statute with the Washington and Federal Indian Child Welfare Act. And 1338.020 is the specific section of the Washington Indian Child Welfare Act that indicates it applies to 1336 proceedings. So that's the statutory context that we went into this case. And What we have is the layering of the statute. So the guardianship statute requires that the state has to prove that court-ordered and necessary services be offered or provided. The active efforts requirement of the Indian Child Welfare Act tells how the services need to be offered. So we have two things, and it's two different things that the court needs to look at. I think the term reasonable efforts is a little bit of a misnomer because it's not in either one of the statutes. So in this case, we have the mother admitting that all the services were offered or provided. So then the next thing to look at is whether they were actively provided. And I believe that if you look closely at the record, first of all, the court made an active efforts finding, which is finding of fact 2.2. It's at CP 469. And the court's statements in the transcript from the motion on revision indicate that the court was considering an active effort statement. An active, the active effort standard. The the court said at 438 that the department did actively engage. At 441, the court stated they did demonstrate they made active efforts necessary by statute. And again, at 442, the place where appellant was quoting, what the court was describing was it's maybe not the most articulate view of it, but the court did say that active efforts involve some sort of activity, needs to be taking the steps to make services available to provide those services, and in fact they did in this case. They have to do something, and in this case I think they did much.
Does TAW give some other description of active efforts different from how the trial judge here described them?
TAW does not give a separate description of active efforts. In TAW, there were no efforts at all and no findings about active efforts, and the case was remanded to look at whether or not active efforts were made. So here we have the findings. I think what we also have that's not really discussed in TAW is we have the Washington State definition of active efforts, and we also have, at the time that this case was heard, the new federal regulations had not been enacted yet. However, TAW looked at those and said, even though at the time it was it came down, they weren't enacted, said they're still useful to look at. And so both of those require the state definition says timely and diligent efforts to provide or procure the services.
Is there any indication that those federal regulations that were not yet in effect were called to the attention of the trial judge here? I don't recall
that. Well, I think generally on the motion for reconsideration, the appellant's attorney raised the Washington State Indian Child Welfare Act, and I believe did mention in his argument the federal regulations.
But the case was not tried with those as a trial.
That's correct. But I think that those weren't in effect at that point in time. But I think they are illustrative in terms of looking at what the court did and what the department did. And what we have here is we do have timely and diligent efforts, and we have efforts that are specifically designed to work with this particular parent in terms of looking at her needs, inviting her to the meeting. She was involved in developing the case plan. The social worker set up extra meetings with her specific support people from the domestic violence services and from Northwest Youth Services, who was working with her on housing. And the record says specifically these people were invited so that they could help understand what was being required of her and could help her with those services. We have not one but three evaluations of this mother and what's called an FCAP assessment, which was a separate evaluation relating to the child's needs for permanency. One of the examples in the new federal regulations is that there be a comprehensive assessment of the circumstances of the Indian child's family with a focus on safe reunification. So we have not one but three of those. We have identification of specific services. For example, in this case, it's important to look at the context. This is a mother that had been in many services for a lot of years, and one of the things she had been in was individual therapy with a person named Liz Snyder. When the dependency started, and they made sure that she was going to therapy with the person who she had already developed a relationship with. The other thing that's really important in this case that they did was in terms of her domestic violence services, they said, you know, she's not a good fit for the typical class. What she needs is dialectical behavioral therapy to focus on the emotional regulation and how she deals with people. And again, they tied in Liz Snyder, who she knew and had a relationship with, and the record shows that then Liz Snyder worked with her on those services.
In the trial court, was there an assertion of those things that should have been done that were not done, and if they had been done, it would have satisfied the ICWA standard?
So in the trial court, there were two things that were argued. One is additional visitation. Two is the services to Mr. Mayer. And it's clear that from the TH case, that, and this court obviously is aware of that, that visitation is not a service.
Is there anything in TAW that changes that?
No. There's nothing in TAW that says visitation is a service. And, in fact, even the new federal regulations don't say that visitation is a service. They encourage visitation in a setting that is most family-like, which happened in this case. The mother had visitation in her own home. But they also specifically say that visitation has to be in a situation with this, which is safe for the child. And that was the crux of the issue here, is that going past the visitation that they had was not safe for the child because of the mother's ongoing relationship with Mr. Mayer and her lack of understanding of the risks that were presented by him. So I think another factor that to look at in this case is that this is a guardianship, and within the structure of the guardianship, the mother is going to be allowed to have ongoing visitation. And in fact, the court order sets up a plan for moving to unsupervised visitation with some certain structures that include protections from Mr. Mayer and giving the guardians some authority to make sure that the visits are safe.
Is a guardianship a permanent state of affairs, like termination is, or is it uncertain in its duration, unlike termination?
Guardianship is really seen as a less restrictive alternative to termination. Under the guardianship statute, when the guardianship is implemented, the underlying dependency is dismissed, and so it can be permanent. However, the statute also allows for a parent to come back if they've made changes and petition the court to have the guardianship undone, or petition the court to have visitation modified. And also, you know, the underlying that is whether it's in the best interest of the child. Our Supreme Court case of AW and MW does a good job of explaining how the guardianship works. But again, this is not a permanent situation. In fact, what this case represents is really one of the best outcomes and the reason why the guardianship statute is there. We have a mother with some pretty severe intellectual disabilities, but she was able to make progress in terms of her own living situation, but she wasn't able to make progress and never will be able to make progress in changing her cognitive issues. And it's her cognitive issues that the expert testimony and the record show that present the ongoing risk of substantial damage to the child. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to quickly reply to, I believe it was Judge Dwyer's question. I believe you had asked whether anyone had cited to the BIA guidelines.
What I asked was whether or not in the trial court, whether the case was tried with those in mind.
Because you know,
I know that they weren't effective then.
Right.
I don't know whether sometimes people come with trial briefs and say this is going to be down the pike, and sometimes they won't because it's not the law yet.
Right. And it's my understanding, it's my recollection from the record, that the case wasn't tried with them, but they were raised in the motion for reconsideration, and that's at citing the record.
I'm not really asking it as a waiver argument. I'm just
sure
trying to get an idea of what,
no, they were brought,
what was the judge asked to consider.
Right, they were brought to the, sorry to interrupt you, they were brought to the trial court's attention in the motion for reconsideration at 484 to 89 in that motion, and they were specifically, the court's attention was drawn to the fact that the guidelines emphasize the higher standard, the heightened standard that the department has to make under the ICWA versus 1334, and also that the BIA guidelines suggest a couple of specific services that are required under the ICWA, because you had asked whether TAW changes anything. And some of the specific services that were suggested under the BIA guidelines raised in the motion for reconsideration were enhanced visitation, and again, this was under the motion for reconsideration, and trial home visits. And I'm raising that, I'm sorry if I could just finish.
Sure.
And I'm raising that because Judge Snyder had specifically been concerned about the lack of parenting time Ms. Hammond had been given at a time when visits were unfailingly positive and when he found that she posed absolutely no risk to the child, and at times when home visits, and I believe he even said overnights, would have been appropriate to explore. So that's why the BIA guidelines were really important, that they were raised in the trial court and they were not implemented.
I want to ask about the expert witness testimony. In these cases, the tribe has a status akin to a party. I don't know if they're actually designated a party, but they appear, they can be heard. Mm-hmm. The Tulalip spend a lot of money for tribes with less money to provide people for that. Is it normal in these cases, or is it typical in these cases, for the tribes to designate the expert witness?
Yes, Your Honor, it's the tribes send their own witness, and that's the reason that it's important. And to be honest, it's strange in this case they sent such an unqualified witness, and it's our position it was an abuse of discretion that for the trial court to qualify this witness is because, as I stated, and I at much greater length,
Mr. Charles, is that who you
yes, said? That this witness had been on the case for less than a week. He had been working with the Lummi tribe for only, I think, a month and a half, and had no experience and gave no offered no evidence as to how this child's specific tribal heritage would be preserved. He gave no evidence about the Lummi Nation. And what's very, you know, and I'll just be really brief, what's really troubling about that is that the ICWA was enacted by Congress to preserve the specific tribal heritage of specific tribes. And that's stated in the U.S. Supreme Court case, Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians, that the focus of the ICWA is not a generic reference to all Indian tribes in general. The point is to prevent a weakening of various tribes' specific abilities to assert their interests in their own children. Okay. It's not in general, it's the Lummi tribe specifically, and that's why it's a sufficiency issue, and it was not met.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, our next case this morning will be O'Brien versus Carter.